You're listening to the La Trobe University Mental Health Podcast Series, where La Trobe students chat about various mental health topics that are impacting students and their lives. At least 1 in 4 students are struggling with their mental health at university, so let's talk about mental health to help improve student awareness and break down stigma. The Mental Health Podcast Series was developed by the Student Mental Health Focus Group in conjunction with Strategy, Education and Prevention.
I'd just like to start off with providing a content warning. Mental health is a sensitive topic, and there may be content discussed in this podcast which may be activating for some individuals. If you would like to get some support for yourself within the university, please contact the La Trobe Health and Wellbeing Centre on 0394791085.
And I'll just start off with some introductions. So my name is Brooke. I'm based in a regional area, so more towards the Albury-Wodonga area, and I'm studying a Bachelor of Psychological Science.
And I'm Joshua. I'm based in Bundoora campus, and I'm studying a Bachelor of Biological Science.
My name is Taddy. I'm in Bendigo, and I'm studying Biomedical Science.
So we're all a bunch of nerds here, basically. We're all a bunch of science nerds.
Alrighty, let's get into it. So I'm really excited for what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about imposter syndrome. So to start off, start with some definitions. Imposter syndrome, as defined by the APA, is a pervasive feeling of self-doubt, insecurity, and incompetence, despite evidence that you are skilled and successful. So what do you guys think? Like, obviously that's the official definition, but how would you guys define it for yourselves?
Brooke, do you want to take this away first?
Yeah, well, my answer is going to be a little bit boring, but I feel like it's a pretty good summation. I would definitely agree with the fact that it's quite a pervasive feeling of self-doubt. It's something that I have experienced pervasively. So I feel like that word is quite apt in describing it. I'm pretty happy with that definition. What about you, Joshua?
I think the simplest way that I can define it personally is feeling like I don't deserve to have something, basically. So if I'm at university studying science, there might be this pervasive feeling that I don't deserve to be there. That the reason I was there was a product of accumulated luck and had nothing to do with my own decision-making or perseverance or inherent qualities within myself. So that's, and I do agree with that definition as well. How about you, Patty?
Yeah. Well, for me, like, I agree. Like, all of those are exactly how I feel. And it's kind of like this illegitimate achievement of what you've gained. So not being able to internalize, like, how you've achieved certain things or your accomplishments and feeling like it was exterior forces, like Joshua said before.
Yeah.
Wow,
totally agree.
Yeah, that's a good word for it too. Illegitimate. That's exactly what it is. Yeah, you feel like what you have achieved is not a product of your own internal efforts, but just some external force. Yeah, that's absolutely agree with that. Do you guys know when you first became aware of this concept? I think personally for me, I probably would have been a teenager.
I definitely think it was like mid high school, maybe about year 9, year 10, where you start having to like decide, oh, what am I going to do in the future?
I've definitely experienced imposter syndrome in many different ways, like throughout my life. I think it's probably most evident in like university settings, but I definitely can trace it back to much earlier than that. But I can't say there's one moment where I'm like, ah, that's the first time I felt this terrible feeling.
But isn't it interesting that we all can trace it back to high school? Probably because as a teenager, you're trying to figure out who you are, what you want to do. You're formulating your identity. There's also a pressure to fit in. And to an extent, you have to fit in order to operate within the culture and your society. And then you're also trying to figure out who you are as an individual. So maybe that's why imposter syndrome is likely to occur at that time, because you don't know who you are. So it's easier to feel like you don't deserve your achievements. I don't know if that makes sense. Does that make sense what I'm What I'm trying to
Yes, it
say.
does make sense what you're saying. I also wonder, like, developmentally, and I, probably should know this, but let's, disregard that for a second. But surely there's something that's happening in your brain developmentally that is sort of like the root, especially because this is a particularly a period of time where people experience, I don't know about you guys, but for me particularly, it's where you sort of experience real volumes of shame in a sense. And I feel as though there's perhaps some connection between that too. I don't know.
That's a really good point. I think imposter syndrome is tied to emotions like shame, right? Whether deserved or not, you know, it is. Yeah, I really like that. I think so too. What do you think, Patty, in terms of the emotions that you experience in association with imposter syndrome?
For me, like I think it's more so from when we're young, all of our lives or decisions are influenced by like maybe like our family or school or other societal institutions. But as going from high, like end of high school, coming into university, it's when we're actually having to start making our own decisions. And I think my maybe from my personal experience, it's like my imposter syndrome comes from that. Am I not wise exactly, but do I have the capability or the capacity to make my own decisions, or is what I'm saying actually, is what I'm thinking and what I'm deciding actually correct?
That's actually a really good segue into our next topic, which is imposter syndrome and study. You guys like that? I did
Great job, Joshua.
that good. Yeah, and speaking of those feelings coming in when you start attending university, I wanted to ask you guys, I was really interested to know to what extent has imposter syndrome had an impact on your ability to study or your perception of the achievements that have arisen from your studies. Brooke, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, I'm just reflecting on that. That's a really good question. I think with regards to imposter syndrome having an impact on my study, it's funny because this is not my first time at university. So this is my I've come back now as a mature age student, right? And so I've experienced two sides of the spectrum in regards to my achievements at uni. In my first degree, I did fine, but I didn't do very well, to be honest. And I experienced a lot of burnout and whatnot. And it was easy for me to just be like, oh, well, that's, totally because, of me. Like, I obviously am not competent or whatever. And but this time coming around, I'm still the same person, right? But I'm achieving things quite differently in this degree. And when I sort of think about that, I'm like, well, I'm still the same person. I have the same, if anything, just a bit of a side note, like I actually, at this point in time, I have a neurological condition, which I didn't have when I first attended university. So if I really wanted to think about it, in a sense, like personally for me, it is kind of a handicap sometimes. So, and it does affect my cognition and my memory. So theoretically, I'm at more of a disadvantage this time around, but I'm doing a lot better, right? And so when I sort of sit back and think about it, the only thing standing in my way I've come to find was me. I have the capabilities to achieve in this because both degrees that I've done so far, I really liked both of them and I found both of them really interesting. But there was so much fear and so much like I can't achieve, I don't feel as though I'm capable of achieving in the first instance, right? So it was so much easier to just be like, I don't have to put this effort in because it won't matter because I'm not really going to get anywhere anyway. Whereas this time around, it's a bit different. I'm just like, I'm here. I've got a pretty strong purpose for being here. I don't really know where I'm going with that, but
I actually understand what you're saying. And what I wonder is, did these feelings of imposter syndrome and the associated shame flare up when you came back to do the second degree? Because I know in my experience, I've had to stop and start my degree twice now. And those feelings really came up, especially when you're starting again. For example, I had to drop some subjects last semester. I'm starting this semester again with a full-time study load. And there's an associated shame of, do I deserve to actually do this degree? And like Patty was mentioning before, am I smart enough? Am I wise enough to even do this? Do I deserve it? So I'm wondering, Brooke, if you had some of those feelings resurface when you were doing this second degree.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I guess an interesting for me is like obviously I started July 2021, so I was a mid-year intake, right? So this is sort of like the middle of COVID, which was what something that absolutely everybody was experiencing. And I don't know what it was like for you guys at the time, but I was at a particularly like low point in my life. And coming back to university, funnily enough, was the first sort of sense of structure I had back in my life, and the first sense of autonomy and control that I'd sort of had in a while, because I had been so unwell with my neurological condition just prior to starting. So me actually starting university was kind of the opposite this time around, because I was sort of like, this is the first time I was like, I can actually do this. It was sort of me fighting that imposter syndrome in a sense.
Ah, so it's the second time that you're approaching a degree actually gave you the power to manage feelings of imposter syndrome because you have had that prior experience. That's really interesting and something that I can definitely relate to. Taddy, I was wondering as well for you what role it played in your studies. Has it affected it negatively, or have you found benefits in it? What is your interpretation of that?
I love before when you were talking about, am I smart enough? I think as science students, there is this stereotype of to be a science student, you have to be this smart, you have to have done this, this, and this, you have to be this disciplined, et cetera, et cetera. And obviously, I'm sure that's not the case for most of us. We all fall short some places. So I think when it comes to studying, it could even impact like the kind of things you choose to study. Like, will you opt for this subject because you think you're smart enough? Well, I'm not smart enough to do this subject, and then it kind of like directs the course that you decide to take. I think that's how I've kind of experienced it within my studying.
Wow, that is such an excellent point that I hadn't thought of, but it's true. Feelings of imposter syndrome will influence the decisions that you make regarding your study. You may not wish to undertake a science degree or a specific unit that you find really interesting and really engaging because you don't think that you're good enough to do that and that you don't deserve to be there and you don't have the capacity to. And even if you did go in and you succeeded, oh, well, it was just luck.
Just
And that has
a
nothing to do with you.
fluke. You guys seriously make touch on some really key points there, because I have that actual experience, Teddy. Like one of my minors is in neuroscience, right? And it can be pretty full on. So I was just like, man, who do I think I am that I can do neuroscience? There's no way that I'm anywhere near as clever as these, like as people in my cohort and my professors. I was like, so you're spot on there, Patty.
No. I also think I read this actually when I was looking into things coming into the podcast. A way that other people have found it impacts their study is it builds like an over-reliance on peers. So if you're doing an assignment, people will look to like the top student and be like, oh, can I have your notes? Because they don't feel like they could come up with notes that are good enough. So they over-rely on other people's success, or like, which I thought was really interesting.
That is really interesting.
Yeah. So what you're saying, Teddy, is that some students don't have the confidence in their own abilities to be able to forge the way forward for themselves. So they just copy the people that seem to have it together. Yeah, that's really interesting. And that's where I think imposter syndrome can be particularly inhibitory to your development. Because I heard the story about how each of us have our own mountains to climb. And at the top of that mountain, you'll see your own unique view. But if you're just one third up the mountain and somebody tells you what the view is like up there, and you think, oh, okay, there's no point me going up all the way to the top because this person's already told me, then you're defeating the potential that you have to carve out a life that's unique to you and one that you enjoy, because you're preventing yourself from seeing the view that you're destined to in a way. I think your point, Taddy, about how imposter syndrome can stop you from individualizing yourself is such an important one, because that actually brings me to my next question, which is how do you manage the feelings associated with imposter syndrome? And one of the ways that I do that is to talk to people about their experiences, have genuine, vulnerable conversations like the one that we're having. And then you realize how similar everyone's stories are, that we all experience similar emotions. We all have similar experiences. And that's so much better, because then you can inspire one another to be the people that you want to become, as opposed to just, as you're saying, Teddy, purely mimicking, which is useful. Mimicry is useful, but mimicking somebody else because you don't have the confidence in yourself to feel that you deserve to be where you are.
That's so true. I totally agree. That notion of opening up dialogue with other people is so important, just because oftentimes we can get stuck in our own little world or own little viewpoint, and we forget that other people, or we can't see what other people are going through or what's going on in other people's minds. So definitely opening up that dialogue and being like, okay, this is what's happening. It's not just me is really, really key to overcoming that feeling.
What do you think, Brooke? What are some ways that you manage the feelings associated with imposter syndrome while you're studying?
Well, it's pretty much what you guys have pointed out. Like, it just being willing to open up that dialogue with your peers, like, it's super intimidating to start off with because, when I first started, everything was online. So that was sort of like, approaching people online can probably seem a bit strange or whatever. But back then, it's what we had to do. But I'm fully online now. So if I don't, try, then I risk completely isolating myself. But every time I have reached out to a peer or to my peers, like as scary as it has been, it was worth it every single time. I've come away having some really insightful conversations. But we're all experiencing these common feelings, with and just knowing like I'm not alone in this. And like a secondary thing to that is I also work as a peer learning advisor, which is something that students sort of opt in to get that one-to-one peer support to help develop independent learning skills and such. But another component of that is that students actually sometimes just reach out to have another student to talk to say like, I'm feeling super overwhelmed or like I'm feeling like all these ways is like. And the amount of times I'm like, you have no idea how normal it is what you're experiencing. And like me, like they're sitting there thinking that, I'm this person who has everything together because I'm, the peer learning advisor. I'm like, no, I am 100% right there with you. But
For
just
all those
like,
listening, Taddy and I are nodding completely to what
yeah,
you've
there's
just
been
said.
so much nodding in this, but yeah, like it's just illuminating. Just how much we experience these things. And I think you guys covered that.
I
Yeah,
think
on that, like, yeah,
I'll go on,
you
Taddy.
can. I was just gonna say on that note that it's normal to not be have everything all together. Like, I feel as a student coming back to school, as a student, something that we often do is we imagine or we compare ourselves to where we want to be instead of where we actually are. So I remember one time, like, I was having a conversation with my lecturer. I was like, I'm not getting this content. Like, it's not making sense to me. And she was like, that's why I'm the teacher and you're the student. I don't expect you to have the knowledge that the teacher would have. And just reframing that mindset of, yes, that's where I'm going, but I'm not there yet, kind of is how it's helped me kind of reframe my imposter syndrome. It's like, I'm going there, but I'm not actually there yet. So I can't compare that level of knowledge to where I am now. That's
Yeah, and
amazing.
in addition to that, it might sound like a cliche, but not only comparing yourself to where you are now, but where you were before,
Oh, yeah.
right? And it does sound like a terrible cliche in many ways,
No.
but it's one that I has deeply helped me, because actually I was thinking about this the other day. I don't think that as humans we can stop ourselves from comparing who we are to other people. I believe it's impossible. I think that it's probably an underlying biological mechanism. Or maybe, but I have no idea. What I think we can do, though, is compare ourselves to others in a way that inspires us, that doesn't defeat us. So we can compare ourselves to who we were before to demonstrate to ourselves the development that has actually occurred throughout time as individuals. And then we can use where other people are as inspiration for the potential person we could be, but not use it as a way to invalidate who we are today. That sort of relates to the imposter syndrome, where you can think that that person over there who's higher than me on the academic hierarchy or the social hierarchy, that they've got it all together, they know what they're doing, they deserve to be there, and they know they deserve to be there. And you can look at it like that, or you can look at it like, oh, and in addition to that, it's you look at yourself and think, I'll never get to that point, and I don't deserve to get to that point because I'm not made for it. So you can look at it like that, or you can think, what were the things that that person did to get to where they are now? How can I be inspired by that, but not defeated by it?
That's so good.
What do you guys think?
I think comparison really can be the thief of joy. And but like you said, Joshua, it's almost impossible not to do it, right? I found comparing myself to others really crippling in the past. An activity that I actually did, I think it was last year, was we had an activity where at I think it was week one. We had to write a note to either, I think it was like week six or week 12 version of ourselves to something that would sort of help future you sort of keep, feel motivated to sort of keep going because you're so close to the end. So I took that sort of activity a little to heart. So I was just sort of like, what would future me need to hear? Because I'm in a good headspace when I was writing it, right? So I was just like, I was in a good frame of mind, and I knew I probably wasn't going to be in, the 6 or 12 weeks. So I just, reminded myself sort of where I was at and how I should be proud of that, and sort of just to reflect on that at that point in time, because I didn't know how I was going to feel. Anyway, I got to that week 12 or week 6, whatever mark it was, I got to that and I read that, reread that, because I'd completely forgotten about it. And I cried after reading it, just because, like it didn't even say anything like that, like philosophical or anything. It was just real, and it was just a gentle reminder to say, stop being so hard on yourself. You've done the work. You've got this, it was something to that effect, and it was profoundly impactful,
Wow, I really appreciate your vulnerability sharing that with us. And I can't believe this, because it actually relates to something that I wanted to mention, which is one way that I manage feelings associated with imposter syndrome is to form a foundational and strong relationship with myself. Relates to your story about how you wrote yourself a letter when you're in a good frame of mind for your future self. In a way, it's like interacting with another person, because that future self is not who you are now. So you are interacting with another person. That's how I look at it, where I start treating myself as somebody else or somebody that I care for and love deeply. What would I say to them? I have a sister who's studying teaching, and she's absolutely brilliant. She's doing a teacher's aide as well. And if she had come up to me and said, I don't deserve to be a teacher, what would I say to her? Because I'll tell you right now, it definitely wouldn't be, no, you don't deserve to be a teacher. It absolutely wouldn't be that. But that would be my proclivity to myself. So I really empathize with that story, Brooke, because that's how I frame it in my mind as well. Before we actually mentioned one way to manage imposter syndrome was by opening conversations with others, have that social dimension and that social aspect. Brooke, I was wondering, what do you think culture plays and the social influences have on your experience of imposter syndrome?
That's a good question. And it's funny because I never feel like I'm equipped to answer that, right? Like I'm having imposter syndrome when you ask me that question. I'm like, I don't know anything. What could I possibly, there's no insight I could possibly add. But
I have the same experience too.
well, I think, this is something that I think will be different for every single person, right? Because the dynamics, your perception of culture is quite unique, right? And it can obviously is shared. In my family dynamic, sort of the expectations of sort of like what you would sort of do in your future and with regards to studying, I'm actually the first person in my family to attend university. So for my family, the influence on imposter syndrome in the sense of, I think there's actually a lot of imposter syndrome in my family because there's a lot of self-doubt, a lot of self-doubt. So the fact that I've sort of, even considered further education, they were like, yeah, go you, like, awesome. Like, I could never do that. But that's so not true. They all have more than the capability to do it. But that's just one example of how that has affected, well, that's in my little sphere, I guess.
I actually really love that you pointed out an important aspect of social influence is familial influence. These are people that you may see every day who provide you with these lessons as you're growing up about how to think about the world. And if there is a lot of self-doubt pervasive in the individuals that you know, your friends, or your family, it rubs off on you. So you may start to think, I can't achieve this thing because I come from this place. And I will never completely belong in this destination because I'm a product of where I've come from. And I just think that's a very poor way of thinking about it, but it's a product of imposter syndrome, in my view. What do you think, Taddy?
Yeah, no, I agree. It's so hard, I think, when we have that history or expectation or what we know. I feel like in life, what we know, our world is limited to what we know. And when we don't go beyond that, or when we try to go beyond that, it can be confronting or it can cause like an internal conflict. So, what you were saying, like in your family, Brooke, if everybody in your family hasn't been to uni before, and then you see other people outside of your family who have gone to uni trying to bridge that gap between myself and others can cause that conflict within you, which I think is a really good point.
I love what you just said, Teddy, about breaking into a new world and that generating the feeling of imposter syndrome. I think that can really happen if you're the first one to do something within your local social group. You can feel like you don't belong there because you're not a product of that world. I think the inverse can happen as well, where if you're a product of that world, you become resentful of that world and you try to separate yourself from it. But that's such a good point. I know that. I also think it's your past experience with whatever world you're trying to break into. For example, I'm pursuing a science degree, but in high school, I disliked science and math vehemently and didn't do very well in science and math during high school. So I got a lot of negative reinforcement that, I don't know if I used that correctly, but I got a lot of feedback basically that I wasn't that kind of person. A teacher even sort of told me that I wasn't that. I wasn't really a science person. And he had every, there was plenty of evidence to suggest that in front of him. And so because you haven't succeeded in the past, you think that you can't succeed in a certain area in the future. And that can create these feelings of imposter syndrome, like, well, look, in the past, I didn't do well here and I couldn't succeed here. So maybe I actually don't deserve to be here. Maybe any success I have is just a product of fortune and not because I've worked hard to reverse the implicit beliefs about myself that I once had. What do
That's
you
so true.
think, Brooke? Do you have anything to add on familial pressures or social pressures about and how that influenced your imposter syndrome?
If I think about family-wise, it actually takes me back to when I actually chose the first degree that I did. I was the degree I chose, one, because I found it super interesting. It was like the only subject or the only sort of degree that I thought would is where my interests sort of lay. But I didn't do psychology in high school, right? But I've always been interested in people. I found them fascinating from day one. And back then, I was interested in psychology, ha having no academic or no real knowledge of it beyond the fact that of what you sort of generically know, right? And I remember someone saying to me back then, because I was thinking about, what's the future like? And I remember someone saying when I talked about, maybe psychology, I w think I could really pursue that because, I find people so fascinating. Anyway, the outcome of that conversation is I remember that person saying to me, "You're too empathetic. There's no way you can do psychology," which, like me now, I laugh at that. Like,
But it's those little comments that stick with you, is it?
but it did,
You
like that.
can't do this.
It fully informed, like I was like, yep, obviously, I must be incapable of that, because all it took was that tiny seed of doubt, and I was like, nope, obviously, I'm not capable of this. And that, I feel, is a huge influence, because I've ultimately come back to it, right? And I just wish that I would have just had a little more belief or faith in myself back then, rather than listening to the noise.
Yeah, and I think if you experience imposter syndrome, it makes you more susceptible to those kinds of comments as well. And those kinds of comments can actually influence the development of imposter syndrome. So somebody told you that you're too empathetic to be a psychologist, you couldn't manage it. So that could have been in the contributing factors to that development. And I guess it sort of links back to how we manage imposter syndrome. And that is a social influence in terms of somebody telling you something that you can't do something, or you don't belong here, or you're not good enough for this. And they may not even say it explicitly. It just might be an implicit in the way that they behave towards you, right? So one way that I manage that is if somebody is telling me that I can't do something, I think, well, why? Why can't I do it? Why are they even saying that? And then proving to myself that I can do the thing that somebody else told me I can't. And that's how I manage imposter syndrome and the feelings associated with it from other people.
And I th it what that highlights to me, like a big thing that I always come back to, is the importance of self-talk, right?
Yes, definitely.
That's one thing that, until I sort of realized and identified this the way I talk to myself, it was kind of like one of those like aha moments, right? You don't realize sometimes how bad something is until someone's like, yeah, your self-talk. And in psychology, we sort of you learn a fair bit about self-talk, and just identifying how I talk to myself was, I think, a huge turning point for me in being able to sort of acknowledge imposter syndrome. And then, not necessarily, like, I'm not saying I've overcome imposter syndrome, like, I mean, but
Yeah, none of us are saying that, by the way.
but it's helped me coexist with it, right? It's helped it not be so crippling or stifling. So I think you brought up some, like, a really important point there of how you talk to yourself. Self-talk, I have found, has been, yeah, critical for managing imposter syndrome. I don't know. What do you think, Daddy?
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. Self-talk, speaking positive things or constantly affirming yourself is something that I think is really beneficial. I just wanted to touch a little bit, like, on the flip side of what you guys were saying. Definitely imposter syndrome can come from people imposing doubt on you and projecting whatever insecurities or whatever upon you. But in my experience, I've also encountered imposter syndrome from the opposite. So people being overly complimentary, people saying that, oh, you're very good at this, you should do this. And they have this expectation or this idea of who they think you are. And then that imposter syndrome comes in the sense that you think that, oh, people don't actually know. I'm not I'm just pretending to be good at all of this stuff. So
Oh my God, I love that answer, Patty.
I'm a
It's so
pseudo
true.
intellectual.
Yeah, you feel you can't live up to the expectations of others for you.
Yeah, exactly.
I
So
absolutely love
it
that
can
answer.
come in both ways, both from people inflicting doubt and also from the other side, society having this image or expectation of you. And when you don't meet that
Absolutely.
expectation in reality, that can cause that imposter syndrome to come in again.
That's an exceptional point. It actually brings me to the last thing that I wanted to discuss today, which is the role of social media on imposter syndrome. And I like, Teddy, the point that you made about imposter syndrome being generated from not feeling like you're living up to the expectations that others have for you. And I think social media may exacerbate this because we're looking at curated lives of other people. There's this implicit understanding that we should meet the expectation of those curated lives. And I think even the people who are doing so feel fake. They don't feel they're being authentic because they feel like they're having to constantly live up to what they think other people want to see of them as opposed to who they truly are. So there's this cognitive dissonance between how they really feel and think and how they behave on social media. So I wanted to get your guys' perspectives on how social media has played a role in your experience with imposter syndrome.
I definitely agree with what you're saying. Like, on social media, we do present this ideal, the best of the best, without including all the journey that came to provide that product. And so, like, it kind of ties back to what we were talking about before, comparing the product to the cake to the ingredients, comparing the final product to the starting things that are there. So in imposter syndrome style, not style, imposter syndrome, we do compare like the end goal to the beginning. So I think social media definitely impacts it in that way.
What do you think, Brooke?
Social media, oof.
Big can of
Yeah,
worms. This is a bad one.
I can say a huge can of worms and probably a podcast topic on its own, right? I am pretty intentional with my use of social media in the sense of I am probably one of those strange people. I have two Instagram accounts, right? I have one where I follow my like family and friends, and one where I follow all my interests because the way my brain works, it's hard for me to filter out all the fuzz, right? I there's on social media, it's just like a constant barrage of like incoming information. So I sort of have to separate the two things, like my interest versus, like my friends and those connections that are important to me, just as like a way of one to sort of to protect me from like always being on social media, because when you sort of separate the things, you can sort of get through the information a bit quicker. But also, it's deliberate in a sense of when you're following things that you're interested in and like people who are living like interesting lives, right? You sort of you're curating your feed in a sense that you sort of know what to expect. Like I know when I'm going onto that second account, yes, maybe in the back of my mind, I sort of already know that I'm looking at a product rather than people's, genuine everyday experience. Whereas my like family and friends accounts, I'm seeing more so of like a bit more of what's real. I don't know if that's making much sense. Just the way that I interact with social media, I sort of have to make this like clear divide so I don't like blur the two, because it's important for me to just delineate difference, I guess. And that probably doesn't make sense to anybody, but
So would you say that essentially what you're saying is you are very specific and particular about the way that you use social media, so you don't blur the lines between what is authentic and what is a product of somebody's curation? That's
I'm actually the same as you, Brooke. So I have multiple different social media accounts. So I have my one where I follow just people in my everyday life, and then I also have another account which I call my mood board.
Yes, oh, cool.
Because it has like the flashy, the everything that is extravagant or like people's products of where they've come to in their careers or whatever, people I look up to as like, this is where I'm going. And then the other one is like, this is where I'm at. So I totally get what you mean by having that divide. And I think it just helps you in your mind because, like you said, it can get blurry when we try and mix the product and the beginning. So by having them separated, it's like, okay, this is where I'm going. But when I'm not looking at that, I know this is like, I don't know. I get what you
Yeah,
mean there.
that's an interesting way of managing the two by having a separate world so that when you go into the extravagant one, you're going in with the mindset of knowing that this is not accurate to everyday life, that this is a refined version of life, and then having one that's more personal account that still has some of those trappings, but that is a bit more down to earth. That's really interesting.
All right, cool. So I think that sort of summarizes where we're at. I think we're pretty cool to wrap up here. So just wanted to say thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. I'm Brooke.
I'm Joshua.
And I'm Taddy, and we are part of the Student Mental Health Focus Group. Please tune in for future episodes, which can be accessed via the Health and Wellbeing Resource Hub on the Latrobe website or under Mental Health and Wellbeing Resources. Hopefully, you found this helpful. You guys could relate to the things we were talking about, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Thanks for listening, guys.